Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review for Thursday, January 14th, 2021. We'll start with an article on the front page headlined, Impeached Again. Trump faces historic second trial after deadly Capitol siege. 10 Republicans break ranks in vote Wednesday by Lisa Mascaro, Mary Claire Jelonek, Jonathan Lemire, and Alan Fram, Associated Press, Washington. President Donald Trump was impeached by the U.S. House for a historic second time Wednesday, charged with incitement of insurrection over the deadly mob siege of the Capitol in a swift and stunning collapse of his final days in office. With the Capitol secured by armed National Guard troops inside and out, the House voted 232-197 to impeach Trump. The proceedings moved at lightning speed, with lawmakers voting just 1 week after violent pro-Trump loyalists stormed the U.S. Capitol, egged on by the president's calls for them to fight like hell against the election results. 10 Republicans fled Trump, joining Democrats who said he needed to be held accountable and warned ominously of a clear and present danger if Congress should leave him unchecked before Democrat Joe Biden's inauguration January 20th. Trump is the only U.S. president to be twice impeached. It was the most bipartisan presidential impeachment in modern times, more so than against Bill Clinton in 1998. The Capitol insurrection stunned and angered lawmakers, who were sent scrambling for safety as the mob descended, and it revealed the fragility of the nation's history of peaceful transfers of power. The riot also forced a reckoning among some Republicans who have stood by Trump throughout his presidency and largely allowed him to spread false attacks against the integrity of the 2020 election. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi invoked Abraham Lincoln and the Bible, imploring lawmakers to uphold their oath to defend the Constitution from all enemies, foreign and domestic. She said of Trump, "He must go. He is a clear and present danger to the nation that we all love." Holed up at the White House, watching the proceedings on TV, Trump later released a video statement in which he made no mention at all of the impeachment, but appealed to his supporters to refrain from any further violence or disruption of Biden's inauguration. "Like all of you, I was shocked and deeply saddened by the calamity at the Capitol last week," he said, his first condemnation of the attack. He appealed for unity to move forward and said, "Mob violence goes against everything I believe in and everything our movement stands for. No true supporter of mine could ever disrespect law enforcement." Trump was first impeached by the House in 2019 over his dealings with Ukraine, but the Senate voted in 2020 to acquit. He is the first president to be impeached twice. None has been convicted by the Senate, but Republicans said Wednesday that could change in the rapidly shifting political environment as officeholders, donors, big business, and others peel away from the defeated president. Biden said in a statement after the vote that it was his hope that the Senate leadership will find a way to deal with their constitutional responsibilities on impeachment while also working on the other urgent business of this nation. The soonest Republican Senate leader Mitch McConnell would start an impeachment trial is next Tuesday, the day before Trump is already set to leave the White House, McConnell's office said. The legislation is also intended to prevent Trump from ever running again. McConnell believes Trump committed impeachable offenses and considers the Democrats' impeachment drive an opportunity to reduce the divisive, chaotic president's hold on the GOP, a Republican strategist told the Associated Press on Wednesday. McConnell told major donors over the weekend that he was through with Trump, said this strategist, who demanded anonymity to describe McConnell's conversations. In a note to colleagues Wednesday, McConnell said he had not made a final decision on how I will vote. Unlike his first time, Trump faces this impeachment as a weakened leader, having lost his own re-election as well as the Senate Republican majority. Even Trump ally Kevin McCarthy, the House Republican leader, shifted his position and said Wednesday the president bears responsibility for the horrifying day at the Capitol. In making a case for the high crimes and misdemeanors demanded in the Constitution, the four-page impeachment resolution approved Wednesday relies on Trump's own incendiary rhetoric and the falsehoods he spread about Biden's election victory, including at a rally near the White House on the day of the January 6th attack on the Capitol. A Capitol Police officer died from injuries suffered in the riot, and police shot and killed a woman during the siege. Three other people died in what authorities said were medical emergencies. The riot delayed the tally of Electoral College votes that was the last step in finalizing Biden's victory. 10 Republican lawmakers, including third-ranking House GOP leader Liz Cheney of Wyoming, voted to impeach Trump, cleaving the Republican leadership and the party itself. Cheney, whose father is the former Republican vice president, said of Trump's actions summoning the mob that there has never been a greater betrayal by a president of his office. Trump endures his second impeachment largely alone by Jonathan Lamar, Jill Colvin, and Zeke Miller, Associated Press, Washington. His place in the history books rewritten, President Donald Trump endured his second impeachment largely alone and silent. For more than 4 years, Trump has dominated the national discourse like no one before him. Yet when his legacy was set in stone on Wednesday, he was stunningly left on the sidelines. Trump now stands with no equal, the only president to be charged twice with a high crime or misdemeanor, a new coda for a term defined by a deepening of the nation's divides, his failures during the worst pandemic in a century, and his refusal to accept defeat at the ballot box. Trump kept out of sight in a nearly empty White House as impeachment proceedings played out at the heavily fortified U.S. Capitol. There, the damage from last week's riots provided a visible reminder of the insurrection that the president was accused of inciting. Abandoned by some in his own party, Trump could do nothing but watch history unfold on television. The suspension of his Twitter account deprived Trump of his most potent means to keep Republicans in line, giving a sense that Trump has been defanged and, for the first time, his hold on his adopted party was in question. He was finally heard from hours after the vote, in a subdued video that condemned the insurrection at the Capitol and warned his supporters from engaging in any further violence. It was a message that was largely missing 1 week earlier, when rioters marching in Trump's name descended on the Capitol to try to prevent Congress from certifying Biden's victory. I want to be very clear. I unequivocally condemn the violence that we saw last week, Trump said. He added that no true supporter of his could ever endorse political violence. But that message, partially motivated to warn off legal exposure for sparking the riot, ran contrary to what Trump has said throughout his term, including when he urged his supporters to fight for him last week. Trump said not a word about his impeachment in the video, though he complained about the ban on his social media. With only a week left in Trump's term, there were no bellicose messages from the White House fighting the proceedings on the other end of Pennsylvania Avenue, and no organized legal response. Some congressional Republicans did defend the president during the House debate in impeachment, their words carrying across the same space violated by rioters 1 week earlier during a siege of the Citadel of Democracy that left 5 dead. In the end, 10 Republicans voted to impeach. It was a marked change from Trump's first impeachment. That December 2019 vote in the House, which made Trump only the third president ever impeached, played out along partisan lines. The charges then were that he had used the powers of the office to pressure Ukraine to investigate a political foe, Joe Biden, now the president-elect. At that time, the White House was criticized for failing to create the kind of robust war room that President Bill Clinton mobilized during his own impeachment fight. Nonetheless, Trump allies did mount their own pushback campaign. There were lawyers, White House messaging meetings, and a media blitz run by allies on conservative television, radio, and websites. Trump was acquitted in 2020 by the GOP-controlled Senate, and his approval ratings were undamaged. But this time, as some members of his own party recoiled and accused him of committing impeachable offenses, Trump was isolated and quiet. A presidency centered on the bombastic declaration, "I alone can fix it," seemed to be ending with a whimper. The third-ranking Republican in the House, Representative Liz Cheney of Wyoming, said there had never been a greater betrayal by a president. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republican of Kentucky, told colleagues in a letter that he had not decided how he would vote in an impeachment trial. For the first time, Trump's future seemed in doubt, and what was once unthinkable, that enough Republican senators would defy him and vote to remove him from office, seemed at least possible, if unlikely. but there was no effort from the White House to line up votes in the president's defense. The team around Trump is hollowed out, with the White House counsel's office not drawing up a legal defense plan, and the legislative affairs team largely abandoned. Trump leaned on Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina, to push Republican senators to oppose removal. Graham's spokesman said the senator was making the calls of his own volition. Trump and his allies believed that the president's sturdy popularity with the lawmakers' GOP constituents would deter them from voting against him. The president was livid with perceived disloyalty from McConnell and Cheney and has been deeply frustrated that he could not hit back with his Twitter account, which has kept Republicans in line for years. Trump watched much of the day's proceedings on TV from the White House residence and his private dining area off the Oval Office. A short time before he was impeached, Trump was in the White House East Room presenting the National Medal of Arts to singers Toby Keith and Ricky Skaggs, as well as former Associated Press photographer Nick Ut. His paramount concern beyond his legacy was what a second impeachment could do to his immediate political and financial future, according to four White House officials and Republicans close to the West Wing. They were not authorized to speak to discuss private conversations and spoke on condition of anonymity. Illinois General Assembly. Welch calls for unified House. Hillsdale Democrat succeeds Madigan, by Peter Hancock, Capital News, Illinois, Springfield. Representative Emanuel Chris Welch made history Wednesday by becoming the first black person elected Speaker of the Illinois House, succeeding Representative Michael Madigan, the longest-serving legislative leader in modern American history. The House came into session Wednesday afternoon to begin the 102nd General Assembly, just moments after it adjourned a rare lame duck session that ended the 101st biennial session. Speaking on the floor of the Bank of Springfield Center, where the House has been meeting to allow for social distancing due to the COVID-19 pandemic, the Hillside Democrat issued a call for unity, vowing that he would no longer refer to other House members as Democrats or Republicans. Today will be the last time I talk about us as Democrats or Republicans, because I want to talk about us being united, Welch said in his inaugural speech. We're going to work together to move this state forward. Governor J.B. Pritzker, in a statement, said, Speaker Welch has a record of championing legislation that has improved the lives of hardworking Illinoisans, and I have enjoyed working with him to move our state forward. As governor, I believe strongly that it is incumbent upon me to work with the General Assembly's leaders who are chosen by their caucuses, and I look forward to continuing to work with Speaker Welch on our shared agenda. Welch was elected Speaker by a vote of 70-44 over House Minority Leader Jim Durkin, Republican of Western Springs. And while Durkin opened his remarks by saying he was extending an olive branch of cooperation starting today, he then launched a verbal polemic against Madigan, who is leaving the Speaker's office amid a cloud of corruption allegations. While his reign as Speaker is all but over, his decades in power will never be erased, Durkin said. What we have here through this unique and rare opportunity is the ability to break from the past, to break that business model, because they are as apparent as the masks on our face. Last summer, Durkin initiated the petition that forced the House to form a special investigating committee to probe Madigan's role in a bribery scheme involving the utility giant Commonwealth Edison and determine whether disciplinary action should commence. But it was Welch who chaired that committee and made sure it did not recommend disciplinary action. Madigan, who on Monday announced he was suspending his bid to remain Speaker, issued a statement Wednesday congratulating Welch as Speaker-elect, minutes before lawmakers were set to make the vote official. As I prepare to pass the Speaker's gavel to a new generation of Democratic leadership, I want to thank the people of my district and the members of the House Democratic Caucus for the faith and trust they have placed in me over the years, Madigan said in the statement. I want to thank my staff for their hard work on behalf of every member of this caucus. It has been the honor of a lifetime to help bring people of different experiences and backgrounds together to serve our state. Madigan had been Speaker 36 of the past 38 years, but a vote Sunday by members of the Democratic caucus signaled he lacked enough support to keep the gavel. He suspended his speaker campaign the next day. Last summer, Madigan was identified in a Justice Department investigation as the beneficiary of a years-long bribery venture involving ComEd. It has thus far yielded a $200 million fine on the utility giant, a ComEd executive's guilty plea, and indictments of four others, including Madigan's closest confidant. Madigan has not been charged with a crime and has denied wrongdoing. Welch has been part of Madigan's inner circle, serving as chairman of the powerful executive committee, and was chosen last fall to be chairman of an investigative committee demanded by Republicans to review Madigan's involvement in the ComEd scandal. Welch abruptly brought the probe to a close, claiming that the Republicans had created a political show. The 78-year-old Madigan has long been perceived as the most powerful politician in Illinois. Former Republican Governor Bruce Rauner, who tried to bring Madigan down, famously claimed that it was Madigan, not he, who was in charge. Said Attorney General Kwame Raoul, members of the Illinois House of Representatives have passed the baton to a new generation of leadership, and I look forward to our work together to enact policies and reforms that protect and benefit all Illinois residents. Meet the new Illinois House Speaker, Emmanuel Chris Welch, state representative for the 7th District since 2013, previously served 12 years on the Proviso Township High School Board of Education. Career, partner in the local government law firm Ansel Glink, graduate of Proviso West High School, Northwestern University, and the John Marshall Law School. Married to Shante and has two children, Tyler and Marley. Beeman case. Court hears claims of murder probe misconduct by Sierra Henry, Springfield. Rockford resident Alan Beeman's fight for a trial on his allegations the town of Normal and three former police officers launched a malicious investigation leading to his wrongful conviction on murder charges returned Wednesday to the Illinois Supreme Court. Beeman was convicted in 1995 of murder charges in the 1993 death of his former girlfriend, Illinois State University student Jennifer Locke Miller of Decatur. He served 13 years of a 50-year sentence before the Illinois Supreme Court reversed the conviction and exonerated him in 2008. The state issued Beeman a certificate of innocence in 2013, and former Governor Pat Quinn pardoned him in 2015. Beeman is seeking damages against the town and retired Normal police investigators Tim Friesmeier, Dave Warner, and Frank Zayas, who Beeman alleges conducted a malicious investigation leading to his wrongful murder conviction. David Shapiro, with the MacArthur Justice Center and one of Beeman's lawyers, argued Wednesday the officers involved in the case conducted a bad faith investigation. Allen could not have been indicted without an investigation and a police file manipulated and curated to pin the crime on him, Shapiro said during the Wednesday hearing. Shapiro said the defendants were the cause of that indictment because over several months they built a file in bad faith and disregarded and failed to investigate other suspects. Alan Beeman has spent his adult life fighting for a fair trial, and this court should give him one, he said. Normal Mayor Chris Coos said he would not comment about the hearing. Chicago lawyer Thomas DeChiani, representing the town and former officers, called on the Illinois Supreme Court to affirm the decision of the 4th District Appellate Court, which rejected the lawsuit in December 2019, finding no misconduct. The Supreme Court justices on Wednesday took the case under advisement. The appellate court is not the only court to have found that, he said. The 7th Circuit, after an exhaustive review of the file, found that there was no misconduct. This is the kind of conduct that occurs in every major investigation. DeChiani pushed back on claims that the investigators maliciously influenced prosecutors' judgment in the case, leading to the conviction, or that the police file was slanted against Beeman, saying the case was thoroughly investigated. Members of school board question lack of bus drivers by Valerie Wells, Decatur. School board members want answers to why the district didn't have more warning that all-town bus service was lacking the number of drivers to open schools next week as planned. Board member Reagan Lewis said Alltown is not fulfilling its contractual obligation. A vendor can hold us hostage and keep us from going back to school when we're ready to do it, Lewis said during a board meeting this week. What pushback did we do? What has Alltown been doing to uphold their part of the contract? This is not an act of God. It's not a default provision. What are they doing so they can perform their contract to us? What has Alltown told us to hold up their end of the deal? The lack of drivers was made known to district officials on Monday. The district on December 4th announced plans to return to in-person learning for 2 days a week starting Tuesday. That date has been pushed to February 8th. We've had plenty of time during that time frame. Why weren't we in conversation with them at that time to say, hey, we got to make sure these buses are ready to go, said board member Kendall Briscoe. Bus drivers have been out of work since the original shutdowns in March, though they received their pay through the end of last school year. They have not been paid since then. Skokie-based Alltown, which has 600 buses across the state, did not respond to a request for comment. School districts are generally required to provide transportation for students who live a mile and a half or further from school. Bus driver shortage ongoing. Amanda Mallerney, who has driven a school bus for almost 25 years, said when the district stopped paying Alltown in May and drivers were out of work, many of them couldn't live on unemployment and had to seek other jobs. The ones who found new jobs are reluctant to give them up if they're only going to be working 2 days a week. We can't support our families on that, Mallerney said. 90% of us have kids and grandkids, and they did not pay us after May. If they would have paid us, I believe a lot of people would have stayed. Unemployment is not enough to live on. Under normal circumstances, bus drivers work 4 hours a day, 2 in the morning and 2 in the afternoon, and also have the opportunity to work extra hours driving buses for field trips, sports, and other activities. Mallerney said she was working at least 40 hours a week, thanks to that, until the shutdown, and to cut back to 2 days wouldn't be feasible for most drivers. Alltown has had a shortage of drivers for some time, she said, but if bus routes were set up right, that problem could be overcome. It takes at least 3 weeks to train a new bus driver, and Alltown is hiring and offers training. The problem is that potential new drivers are reluctant to apply with school shut down, and no guarantee that they'll actually be able to start working. Briscoe said some responsibility for the last-minute notice of the postponement has to fall on the district. We have to evaluate our process, she said. I think that we did pull the trigger before we verified that they had enough drivers, and that was a huge miss on our part. Official, unemployment a factor. Todd Kovalt, District Chief Operational Officer, said District Director of Operations Henry Walker had been in regular contact with Alltown, and they indicated they had enough drivers until Monday. We've been off so long. When it comes down to going back, some of the drivers said it was because it was 2 days a week of work, Walker said. They chose not to come back because they get unemployment. The district, under guidance from the Illinois State Board of Education, continued to pay Alltown during the remainder of the spring semester after the shutdown. But that directive has expired, and Kovalt said the General Assembly has yet to appropriate funds for transportation reimbursement. Alltown has asked the district several times to reinstate those payments to allow them to keep enough drivers on the payroll. But Kovalt said without some reassurance that the district will receive reimbursement for that expense, he's uneasy about doing that. At present, the plan is to return on February 8th, though how many days a week school will be open and how many students can be accommodated is still being considered. Families could opt for in-person learning or elect to remain in remote learning, and Superintendent Paul Fregeau said 3,500 students had chosen the in-person option, which is about a third of the total. Charges denied in deadly shooting by Tony Reed, Decatur. Lamar T. Williams, the 44-year-old man accused of killing a Decatur grandmother as he went door to door in a shooting rampage, is pleading not guilty to murder and other felony charges. Williams appeared in Macon County Circuit Court on January 6th with his defense attorney, Dave Ellison. Williams denied 3 alternate counts of murder in the November 24th fatal wounding of Mary E. Bond, 69. Prosecutors said she was shot in the head as she lay on a couch in her living room after Williams stood outside her home and fired 7 bullets into it. Bond died in a hospital on November 27th. Williams also denied charges of being an armed habitual criminal, the aggravated discharge of a firearm, and two counts of cocaine possession. Macon County State's Attorney Scott Reuter is building the prosecution case on police Decatur reports that said Williams shot up four addresses the night of November 24th that were associated with his 33-year-old girlfriend. Williams was described as being furious after the girlfriend had taken a handgun from his car and then didn't return the weapon. A sworn affidavit from Detective Jeremy Appenzeller said Williams struck first at 9 p.m. at a house in the 500 block of South Webster Street, the home of a woman he believed may have stolen the gun from his girlfriend. Appenzeller said Williams stood outside and shot two bullets through the front door while the woman and her boyfriend were inside. Bond is the girlfriend's grandmother, and she suffered her fatal wound at 9:30 p.m. when her home was hit next, according to Appenzeller. After that, Williams fired 4 to 7 shots at about 9:44 p.m. in the area of the 400 or 500 block of West Main Street. That location is close to the home of a man who is the father of a child belonging to Williams' girlfriend. Less than a half hour later, Appenzeller said Williams targeted a home in the 1000 block of South Martin Luther King Jr. Drive. He shot 5 bullets into the back of the building where his girlfriend's 48-year-old mother was in residence with a man aged 72. The man was wounded after being hit in the left hand. Appenzeller said Williams kept up a stream of threatening messages to the girlfriend as he tried to coerce her into finding and giving him his gun back. A voicemail he left 20 minutes before the shooting started out, "You gonna call me in a minute. Those you love the most. Watch this." Judge Phoebe Bowers found probable cause to try Williams and scheduled a pretrial hearing for January 25th. Williams remains in the custody of the Macon County Jail, with bail set at $6 million, meaning he would have to post $600,000 to be released. Execution. Lisa Montgomery, 52, was executed early Wednesday for strangling an expectant mother in Missouri and cutting the baby from her womb, the first time in almost 7 decades that the U.S. killed a female inmate. Montgomery was the 11th prisoner executed at the facility since July, when President Donald Trump, an ardent supporter of capital punishment, resumed federal executions after 17 years without one. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Herald and Review for Thursday, January 14th, 2021. Please stay tuned.